I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, they took care of you, but can you take care of them? Many Americans have become caregivers to elderly parents or other relatives. And no matter how happily some embrace this new role, it can be a financial and emotional challenge. The moms talk about moving from kid care to elder care. That conversation in just a few minutes. But first, we kick off our summer reading series. And it occurred to us that not everybody is spending this season by the beach. And even if you are, there is a lot of anxiety out there between job jitters, ongoing international conflicts, and the oil spill in the Gulf, among other things. So we decided our Life's a Beach summer reading series will focus on books about how to survive and perhaps even thrive in spite of tough times. Today, in our Money Code segment, we'll hear from Nancy Trejos. She was a columnist for The Washington Post, where she was writing about personal finance. But while Nancy was giving financial tips to other people, her own finances were a mess to the point where she, a Georgetown graduate, could not pay her rent and had to borrow money from her immigrant parents. She has bravely, we think, written a book to talk about how all that happened and to help young women and men avoid the traps that she got herself into. It is called, appropriately enough, Hot Broke Messes, How to Have Your Latte and Drink It Too. Also with us is Alvin Hall, our regular financial contributor. In his book, Your Money or Your Life, he also lays out how to make better financial decisions. And they're both with us now. Welcome. Welcome back, I should say.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Glad to be here.
So, Nancy, I have to say, in reading your column at the Post, I would have never imagined that you were, in fact, a hot broke mess. And so I'd like to take you back to that point where you had to call your parents with the tears running down your cheeks and actually ask them to bail you out. If you just take us back there, as painful as it is.
Oh, it was horrible. You know, I had been living in denial for so long. I mean, I would pay my minimum payments on my credit cards and then just forget about them. And I was not looking at my bank account. I mean, I didn't want to deal with it. And one night I realized, well, I really do need to look at my bank account. And I did. And it was scary. I didn't have enough money for rent. And
you didn't even have enough money to get to the office the next day.
Right.
To be really
I had nothing.
You had to walk.
I was broke. I walked the next day, and the entire time I was practicing my speech to my mother, and I could not sleep that night, so I was completely out of it. But I called her, and she picked up the phone, and we chatted a little bit, and then I said, I need help. And I asked her if she could lend me some money, and she put my dad on the phone. And I just remember thinking, I can't believe this. I'm the only one of their children who graduated from college. I'm the only one with a professional job. I was supposed to have my act together, and I did not. And it was terrible.
Well, the reason I find this particularly compelling is that I think we often assume that with younger people, particularly people like yourself who didn't grow up with a background of awareness and involvement with personal finance issues, right? I mean, let's just, you know, your parents, who I think are heroic figures in some ways, came here with very little education, kind of worked for everything they had, saved carefully, lived carefully. But you figure, well, you didn't grow up with an awareness of, you know, credit cards and all that other stuff. And so it's ignorance. But in your case, that is not the case. You, as we mentioned, were an advice columnist.
Right.
So I just want to understand, what do you think was going on with you?
Right. Well, you're right. And I don't blame my parents for anything. They worked really hard. But they never sat us down and said, okay, well, this is what happens when you get a credit card. And this is what you should do when you're considering different banks to put your money in. You know, they just didn't teach that. And you don't learn that in school either. So when I left their home, I left at the age of 17 and I went to Georgetown University. I was on my own and I had no good, you know, financial background, no good, you know, foundation. And I was surrounded by students who came from families, affluent families, and I just wanted to be like them. And at the time, you could get a credit card so easily. I mean, the card companies would show up on campus with T-shirts and their applications. And I said, okay, sure, I'll get a credit card.
I'm supposed to have this.
Yes. And everyone else is doing it. So why not?
And you didn't make the connection between the credit card and the fact that you're actually supposed to pay this money at some point.
Well, I knew I would have to make my payments. But you know, I figured, oh, okay, well, I have a job now and I'll just, you know, pay the minimum and eventually I'll have a job in which I'll be making more money and I'll just, you know, I'll just keep paying this down. But it just became a vicious cycle.
What was your main what's the word I'm looking for here? What was the thing that kind of did you in?
It started.
It wasn't
with,
a medical crisis.
No, it wasn't anything like that. No, no, it was totally my fault, frankly. it started with the shopping, with buying clothing. I graduated from college. I wanted to dress like a professional when I got my job, and then it turned into traveling. And I was an emotional spender. I would have a bad day at work, and I wouldn't want to go home and just sit alone, so I'd go out and have cocktails around here in D.C., which can be really expensive. Or I'd have a breakup and I'd want to escape and I'd run away to California. I mean, I was just impulsive.
You were a hot broke mess.
I was a hot broke mess.
Alvin, how common a story do you think this is? Because we know, for example, that the data is that a significant percentage of bankruptcies are in fact caused by, you didn't go bankrupt, I'm not saying that, but are caused by medical crises. So there's that piece of it. But Nancy's saying that, yes, for her, and for, particularly she feels for other younger people in their 20s and 30s, it really is consumption. What's your take on this?
Oh, Nancy's situation is absolutely common among young people. First of all, there's the compartmentalization, which she did. I will ignore these because it doesn't have anything else to do with the rest of my life. Then there's the emotional spending. But then there's also the part where she spends because she's feeling badly and she needs something to make her feel better. And then there's the other component where they're deliberately ignorant. These are people who have gone to university, they have good degrees, but they make themselves deliberately ignorant, which is that interesting juncture of compartmentalization and denial. So she's quite common in that way.
Alvin, can I ask you, because Nancy's been really honest about kind of her triggers and,
yes,
part of what was pushing her buttons and motivating her to spend. Did you ever have a spending problem? I've never heard you talk,
yes,
about it.
Absolutely. When I graduated from Bowdoin College in Brunswick, Maine, and I got my first job, I thought that I should show people that I had really good taste. My friends used to always say, God, you always have such great taste in things. So when I started my job, I went out and bought Wedgwood china. I bought Christofle silver. I bought Wedgwood glasses, Waterford crystal. I mean, I lived with great stuff. And I wore selectively beautiful clothes. I didn't have a lot of clothes, though. My spending was really about my vanity, my ability, and my desire to show people that I had good taste. But you had to come to my house to see it. Walking down the street, I looked like a little schlump. But when you came to my house, God, he has really good stuff. And that was my real demon.
Why do you think so?
And it took a long time.
Why was it? I'm sorry. I'm really all up in your stuff today.
I talk about this. I've written about this in two books because I think it's really important for people to know that there are emotional triggers. When I was a little kid, we didn't have very much. We didn't have very nice things at all. But when I went off to college, I came to understand what really nice stuff was. And I said to myself, when I start to earn money, I'm going to buy myself the nice stuff because it lasts all your life. I still have those dishes. I still have the silver. I have all of the stuff that I bought way back then.
But how did
today,
you?
Today, I'm much better.
But I was going to ask, did you get yourself into a hole before you figured out? This is crazy.
I had so many credit cards. I think at the height of it, I had 28 credit cards. It was insane. I had developed this mentality because during the summer, I would go from Miami up to Maine. I would drive up, and I wanted to be able to stop at any store, any gas station all along the way. And it was just an insane thing to do, completely and totally insane. But I did it. And then one day I woke up and I couldn't afford to pay the minimum payments on the credit card. I was always disciplined about paying rent because I knew I didn't have any fallback position. I could not go to my parents and get any money. So I always knew that I had to save myself first. That I was clear about. But when I couldn't pay the minimum on the credit cards, I went out and got a job. And I would work at nights and I would work holidays. And it was sort of like a scene from Scarlett O'Hara, Tara is there. And she grabs that dirt as God as my witness. I'll never lose Tara again. I said, as God as my witness, I'll never be in credit card debt again. And I really did work hard, but it took me a long time. And for me, I had to learn all the triggers. And the triggers were, I don't like to spend in August because it was when I was going back to school and because I never got all the clothes I wanted before I went back to school. If I buy clothes in August, I tend to overspend. Mm. During times of year, I simply do not go into department stores at all when that four-letter word sale is there. And I designate certain days of the week as non-spending days. I've discovered in my own pattern of spending, if I'm going to be frustrated, it's going to be on a Wednesday. And if I can just get through Wednesdays without going to a store and buying something I don't need, then Thursdays become easier because it's only one day till Friday.
Wow.
And I have the time off.
Now, I want to ask you, because one of the reasons that we wanted to ask you to join our conversation is that you've also done a lot of work in England. And so you
yes.
kind of have some cross-cultural comparisons about how people are handling these money issues across the generations. And I'm also interested in the cultural aspect
yes.
of it. Do you think culture plays a role in this, or do you think it's individual? Do you think gender? I'm just wondering, what's your sense of it?
We found over the years that women were much better at compartmentalization than men. Women could have a job in which they would be saving the company money, millions of dollars a year, but in their own personal lives, it could be a complete and utter wreck. We also saw over the period of time that people who are recent immigrants or children of recent immigrants tended to want to fit in more. So they would want all of the accoutrements that their friends who had been around for a longer time in that country, whose parents may have had more money, they would want the same things. And so they would go off on these binges of spending.
So Nancy, tell us, though, after you had that low point, you did turn it around.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about how you turned it around. And I do think, I have to say, I think you're very brave to put your business out there in that way, because it's
you.
Bad enough to have these issues, but then to be a personal finance columnist on top of it and have to disclose to the world actually,
yeah.
while I'm telling you how to figure out your 401k and whether you should close a credit card account, I am a mess and I don't even open up my envelopes. I think that took a lot of guts.
You have turned it around.
Please tell me. Yes, I have. Do you have to lend you bus fare to get back across town?
No, I'm okay. You know, it was tough because, you know, my job required me to spend every single day talking to people who had credit card debt, who were having trouble paying their mortgages, who were on the verge of bankruptcy. And that was scary. You know, I would be stressed out like every night when I got home from work. You know, I thought, I'm not that much different than they are. And so that coupled with the, you know, hitting rock bottom and having to borrow money from my parents, I decided, okay, I'm going to get a financial planner. And not everyone has to do it that way. But I felt that I needed someone to hold my hand.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. We're speaking with Nancy Trejos. You may know her as a personal finance columnist for The Washington Post, but behind the scenes, she was a hot, broke mess. She's written a book about her journey to organize her personal finances. She's with us now, along with Alvin Hall, our regular Tell Me More personal finance contributor. Alvin, if you're a hot, broke
yes.
mess like Nancy was, what do you recommend? And can you find, and how would you find someone to help you climb out of that mess?
I would go to one of the nonprofit organizations, such as the Consumer Credit Counseling Services, CCCS, and use them in order to get myself organized and get somebody to interact with you and your creditors. Those for-profit organizations, those debt reduction organizations, tend to be completely false. They don't deliver what they promise to do, the majority of them, and there are huge numbers of consumers' complaints about them. So look at the nonprofit route. If you're afraid to go outside of your own little circle of friends, ask one of your friends. Maybe they will know somebody who can help you get through this. But it's important to ask for help as soon as you can to help put yourself on the correct track to getting out of this burdensome situation.
What else, Nancy? What else did you do? You went to a financial planner, then what did you do?
You know, I spent a few weeks just going through my accounts, going through my receipts, keeping my receipts, writing everything down. You know, you can do this online, too. I personally like to write things down because I feel like they have more, you know, they'll stick more, you know. So it just the act of writing down the fact that I spent, you know, $30 on a meal, you know, made me really stop and think. So it was really a matter of just looking at how much I was spending on, you know, going out to eat, on cocktails, on shopping. And once I figured out, you know, what my problem areas were, you know, she and I had a conversation about, you know, how we could budget for all these different things. And her thing was, you know, she didn't want me to never leave my apartment. She thought, okay, you can have fun, but you need to pay your bills first. And she came up with a plan for paying down my credit card bills. And from there, she came up with a spending plan, a weekly spending plan, in which we covered all of my fixed expenses, and then any money I had left over, which frankly there was not much, you know, she would say, okay, well, you know, you can spend $50 on, you know, going out for drinks.
What was the hardest part?
Well, it was really hard staying on the budget. You know, you have to be really disciplined about it. And the first couple of months, you know, there were times when I screwed up a little bit. But I got used to it. And I also, it was hard to be honest to people. You know, my friends would say, oh, let's go out and, you know, go to this restaurant. And I would have to say, well, it's not on my budget this week. So it was just sort of admitting to everyone that, look, I'm not as wealthy as you think I am. I'm not at all.
Was it, in a way, liberating, though, once you got in the habit?
Yeah, it was nice. And that's why I wrote the book, because I feel that, you know, money is such a taboo subject. We don't talk about it. Growing up, it was either a source of conflict in our households or it just wasn't talked about. And I think we've all grown up thinking, okay, you can't talk about that. And that's when people get in trouble. You know, they get into these situations where they're in debt or they're pretending that their financial house is completely in order when it's not. And then they don't deal with it. They live in denial. They don't talk about it. When you don't talk about it, you can live in denial like that. And so I just wanted to write this book to just say, hey, you know, you're not alone and you can talk about it and you can fix yourself.
Alvin, what have you found over the course of the time you've been doing this work? You've done a lot of work with lots of different kinds of people in exactly this kind of situation. What have you found to be the hardest thing for most people?
Sticking to the plan. Mm-hmm. Everyone tends to view the plan as going on the most severe diet. You will be denied dessert, you'll be denied all of your favorite foods. And that's what they equate it to. And as soon as a little good thing happens, they then go back to the old pattern. That's the hardest thing. Once you convince them or help them understand that you can give yourself a little treat, you can do something nice for yourself. It's not about complete denial, but you have to prioritize and stick to the priorities. Pay your rent and your bills first, and then with whatever money you have left over, you have to make that money work for you for the rest of the week. It's sticking to the plan that always undermines people the most.
Well, thank you for both of you for just being so honest about it, because I think there are probably a lot of people who experience the same things and just, as I said, I just find it very hard to talk about. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. Mm-hmm. Nancy Trejos writes for The Washington Post. She is the author of the new book, Hot Broke Messes, How to Have Your Latte and Drink It Too. She joined us in our studios in Washington, D.C. Also with us is Alvin Hall. He's our regular contributor on matters of personal finance and the economy. He's the author of Your Money or Your Life, among other books, including a children's book about money, which is also worth reading. And he joined us from Poughkeepsie, New York. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
You're most welcome.